Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and just about any other audio app. Head on over to the website, AmericaOutLoud.com, and check out the articles and podcasts. And we have a big show for you guys tonight, but first off, how are you doing tonight, Rob, and what's on your mind?
Man, I am doing great. What's on my mind? You know, there are a lot of things that are on my mind. The state of the world, the economy, social justice, just so much stuff that we're inundated by in today's society. I don't know how people are able to go from one step to the next because we're just so inundated. We're trying to come out of this whole China virus, COVID-19. They're telling us that we need to take a shot. We need to do this. If you don't take a shot, you can't fly. And if you do take a shot, you got to still wear your mask. You have to wear 3 masks, not 1 mask, not 2 masks. Sometimes I don't know if I'm going or coming. There's just so much. And I'm here in New York City. I mean, big liberal state. Well, actually, I mean, upstate New York is kind of conservative, but New York City itself is liberal. And we, you know, make up a majority of the votes here. So I don't know about you and about your state, but this state, it's crazy out there. And like I said, I don't know how people make it from point A to point B. But our guest today, Sydney Novotny, knows. And she's the author of the book, Living with No Balance and Loving It. I mean, I like that. Living with No Balance and Loving It. So I guess there are no boundaries around you. You're just out there making it happen, no matter what happens, and you love it. Do you get the same feeling, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really curious to see what Cindy's going to have to say to us. And without further ado, let's bring in our guest, Sydney Novotny. How are you doing tonight, Cindy?
I'm living the life. No balance and loving it. In the middle of everything that Rob was talking about. And I'm in the state of California. And I'm a partner in a restaurant. So you can only imagine. That's what I'm doing.
And you're making it happen with no boundaries whatsoever.
And I am making it happen without any boundaries. We have, we're in the hospitality industry. 60% of our business is all about hotels, restaurants, travel, airlines, the whole bit. 40% is corporate. Corporate is what got us through automotive and real estate this past year and almost a half. That's how we're almost getting there, right? And, you know, I think my whole take on this, and Rob said it when he opened up, is that it's to the point of almost ridiculous. And I did get vaccinated. I have to get on planes. I got to travel. I was in Mexico last week working in Cabo. You don't need the vaccine to go there, but I want, you know, I'm doing whatever it takes. Okay. And I agree. The 1 mask, the 2 masks. But, and then I had to get a COVID test to come back into the US. And I kept thinking, wow, I actually had my last COVID vaccination on Saturday and I flew to Cabo on Sunday. And, you know, I think they put a little of it in you, right? I thought, oh, that'll just be my luck that I have my test. You have to have it 3 days before coming back into the US and it'll be positive. And then I kind of thought, well, you know, that's what I do. I'll just spend some time down in Cabo then and tell my family and my company, I'll see you in 14 days.
And what happened in 14 days?
Well, I got to come home because I was negative.
You got to come home. So you're in the hospitality business. So yes. When COVID-19 hit, how hard were you hit in California?
So we were hit literally smack dab. I was in Dubai on March 16th last year. I was giving a huge speech. I was planning on staying one more day and then flying. We flew to London because I had to work in London. And I got a call from the hotel that said, you're going to have to leave a day early. We are shutting down Dubai. Because when I left, there was all the talk of, you know, all this pandemic and COVID. And I've been through H1N1, swine flu, bird flu, Zika virus when I was, you know, at the Olympics in Brazil and Rio. And like, I've been through it all. I have literally flown so much. It's amazing that out of my whole team, I'm the one that actually get sick the least. So when they said they're shutting down Dubai, I said, okay. So we got on the flight, flew to London. We were on a Emirates, the double deckers, you know, that like you need a sheriff on it. It's so big. Right. And I knew that I knew it was real serious when we landed and the pilot came out and said, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be getting off the plane and a customs officer will be looking at your passport. And I have a 10-year visa for China in my passport because I spend as much time out of the country that I do in the country. And my husband looked at me and said, wow, I'll probably just meet you at the hotel. Well, sure enough, I think I was probably one of the first people that went through some testing right there at London Heathrow. They took us out, took our temperatures, but it wasn't all of us. It was probably 200 of us off that plane. And that's when I knew it was real. We shut our restaurant down here in Orange County for 2 weeks in April. And we opened up, we've never been open on Easter before, Passover. Those are kind of those family holidays. We decided we're a USDA prime steakhouse and we decided, well, we'll do takeout. So we created in a matter of days, unbelievable, you know, takeout, which we didn't even really know how to do. You know, you have to go figure this all out. And we ended up doing very well because we made as much money as we made on New Year's Eve the year before. And part of that was because we were just delivering anything anybody wanted. People were driving up, popping their trunks. We were putting it in and, you know, it was alcohol to go. I mean, like seriously, at the police stations across the street, I said to him, how are you going to put that genie back in the bottle? Because, you know, before you couldn't step over the threshold of our restaurant outside with an open drink in your hand. And now it's like, there you go. There's your champagne. So we were hit. We were hit hard. We're still hit. We're just like Rob said, we're a little bit like New York. Orange County is a little bit more open than they are in LA or up in kind of the northern part of California. But we took out 5 parking stalls, built a deck, created unbelievable, you know, what I call parking lot dining now, which has become so like chic, right? And we just made everything very cool. But we do training for hotels with sales, leadership, service. 2020 was going to be one of our best years. We've been in business for over 30 years. It was like over the top, sold out, busy. And over probably 2 weeks, we canceled everything. So it just went away like that.
You improvised. Like you said, this was going to be, or last year, 2020 was going to be the year for you.
Right.
But you were able to improvise and build, like make parking lots outside chic. What did the governor have to say? Because you have a very interesting governor, just like I have a rather interesting governor, Governor Cuomo. I wonder if the two were related. I don't think so.
I don't know. Our governor, like we get no updates. I mean, you got too many.
We got way too many updates. I saw too much of him up front and personal with his white t-shirt and his nipple ring. And he's coming out and he's talking like this. All the while, little did I know, he was busy chasing the women in his office. Shh, but we won't talk about that yet. You know, we won't talk about that or the 15,000 people that he murdered, someone told me. But carry on, Cindy. Tell me your story.
Well, I mean, I never got up close and personal with our governor. You know, we did put calls in and say we're just kind of confused on like what the rules are. And so we really stuck with, you know, our local Orange County authorities, police, mayors, you know, everybody, Congress down here, and just said, like, we want people to keep working. And I needed, again, we're a small privately held company that, because I'm a partner in the restaurant and have been for 18 years, but then my husband and I privately own our training company, which, you know, has 40 some people working for us. And we had to furlough the trainers because there was nowhere for them to go. And then the 10 people on our corporate team, which we kept working, everybody took cuts in pay. I took zero. My husband took zero. And I started for the first 6 months. I'm now on about my, I think we counted yesterday, 475 webinars later. And I started this morning at 6 a.m. with Europe. I end sometimes at 9 at night with Asia webinars. For the first 6 months, we did it all for free because our customers had no money and I just had to keep people going. And I kept present. I was out there. My social media was out there. I was always positive. I really do a good job of staying away from all those things, right? So that, you know, you can only imagine if I could have gotten up close and personal with our governor, I would have had some moments. But the whole idea was just tell us what the rules are. I think that's kind of what we need to know. And that's kind of where we are right now. You know, we are, everybody's open now in Southern, in Orange County in a different way, but we just give us the rules. And I think, Rob, you said it. I mean, are we going to have to keep wearing masks forever? If you get vaccinated, you know, because I have people on my team, I'm not making anyone get vaccinated. There's like, I think that's your own personal preference. And I think telling someone they have to is really not where we want to go in this world. And I did it because I actually just need to fly. And so I did it for, I just want my card that says, there you go. I've had all my vaccines. I'm totally covered.
So how did you feel now that you have the vaccine? Were you, was there trepidation, or were you like, hey, this is Trump's vaccine? And yes, folks, it was Trump's vaccine, not Joe Biden. I doubt seriously Joe Biden could have spelled the word vaccine. Trump did this with Operation Warp Speed. He put it out there. But like you, I agree. I'm not going to, I don't we think we should force people to take it. Everyone has got to get that comfort level. But you took it. How do you feel? Was there trepidation?
No, I had no, I have had so many vaccinations because of traveling all over the world. I literally, from going to Africa to South America, into mainland China, all these places where in order to do that, there's certain places when you go into different parts of Africa where there you have to have your vaccine card, certain parts of South America, you're not going from Nicaragua into Brazil, things like that. So I have had so many jabs over my lifetime that I have no qualm. I basically said they could be putting, you know, rat poison in me, and you know, which is Coumadin, which my husband's on Coumadin. So I'm, and he said, oh, thanks. That's what I actually take, a blood thinner. I didn't, it really was to me the fact that I'm in the travel business. And if getting vaccinated is what it's going to take to get people back out and feeling comfortable. My parents are 86 and 87 years old. They were so excited. And whether it works or not, who knows? Because I know people that have had it and they've then had the vaccine and then they got COVID. You know what I mean? So who knows if it works? It's just like the regular flu shot. I get that every year. I never get sick, knock on wood. You know, I could have a heart attack tomorrow, I guess, but I don't get sick. But my parents, what it did for them was it just calmed them down. It was just like, okay, now we feel better. The grandkids can come over, and, you know, and they're in Texas, which has been open for a long time. And so they just hadn't gone out. Now at least they're getting back, going out to breakfast. And they just, it gave them a peace of mind, which I think that's one of the biggest things that's happening.
So taking a shot, you're okay with it. Letting other people decide for themselves. Now, is this the reason why they call you the radical mentor? How did you get that term? What did it come about?
So years ago, because I have been in the business, a hotel business, a long time, I then went out and I worked with Disney and Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company and with Westin Hotels. And when I started out on my own to go out and do training, it was always like, why does everybody talk around everything? Like they just, you know, you're in a board meeting and everybody's talking about like the elephant in the middle of the room without anybody saying it. And you're like, wow. And so I would just start pushing the envelope. I never was good at playing politics when I was in big corporations. I always was the one that would say, why are you bringing this up in front of all of us when you really are only talking about her or him? You know, like I'm never late. I always wear the right dress code. Why are you doing that? And so I would just be that person that constantly pushed the envelope. And really I was that way since a kid. Like, why do we have to do that? Why? And so I had a CEO of a small company had me working with them for about a week. And I just watched the utter BS that went on with his people that were his, you know, frontline leaders, all of his VPs, just blowing smoke and just giving so much hot air. And I finally said in the middle of this, you know, here's the deal, guys. At the end of the day, none of you are making a difference and none of you are doing justice to this organization. So why don't we start to have a real conversation? And the CEO looked at me and said, wow, here's our radical mentor. And it stuck. And then I'm known for a very kind of no-nonsense approach. I'm polite and I'm nice and I'm very, you know, professional, right? But at some point, someone's got to say, like, knock off the madness. That's how I see it.
Knock off the madness and just get straight to the point and let us know when we can get our lives back and do what we would normally do. Now, moving on to your book, Living with No Balance and Loving It.
Yes.
What exactly do you mean by that, living with no balance? And then you want us to love it.
Yes. So, you know, the world's full of, and right now everybody's full, you know, like Zen and light a candle and go to yoga and all this. And I never was that person. I love it. I've tried to do all that sort of thing, but I can't even, you know, I've tried to meditate, calm my mind. None of that works. Right. So when this book I wrote many years ago, and I'm now finishing my second book, which is my podcast and everything about my secrets to stamina, because no one can believe how I just keep going. But my daughter was, when I started the company when my daughter was a year old. Okay. She's now 33. And the thing about that starting a company where you're traveling is you're gone all the time. I literally have logged over 10 million miles. So my husband and I, we had a nanny. He had a regular corporate job at that point. Now he runs our business, but I couldn't just go every single week. I mean, you have to be a mom at some point, but I've never been that kind of mom. Like I've cooked more this year of COVID than I ever cooked in my entire life. And so when my daughter was, you know, a year old, it was easy because I would take her and the nanny, I'd use my miles and they'd go with me. And I even had like a boss at one point because I still was with a company that first year when she was born. And I took her to a huge sales meeting. Now, she was not going to be in the meeting. She was not going to be attending any of the cocktail receptions. She was going to be with the nanny in a room in the pool during the day. And he looked at me and said, did you really bring your kid? I said, yeah, I did. Kids don't come to meetings like this. I said, she's not coming to the meeting. I said, I travel every week. And so at night I'm with my daughter and we can play. And then I'm staying one extra day and then I can go in the pool and splash around with her. And that's when it all started because I got so much flack from people that you spend too much time away from home or you can't pull your child out of school. I took her out of school 1 week a month, her entire life until she went to Texas A&M, literally her entire life. So we have a huge, big map on the wall. And I would say to her, these are the places I'm going to be this month. You pick where you want to go. Sometimes it was Tokyo. Sometimes it was, you know, Cairo. There were times it was just New York City or, you know, Nashville. And from the time she went to kindergarten, we would look at the map and she'd go, okay, what about there? And then we'd look it up. So my daughter got an education like beyond 90% of any normal American kid, because there was no, in her mind, when people talk cultural diversity and all this stuff, she didn't know the difference. I mean, she was out, you know, eating sushi before sushi was cool. She was out like learning how to eat with chopsticks without going just to, you know, a Benihana's. I mean, she literally was like living that life. Well, I got flack for that. Now I did it legally with the school system because I went to the school and said, I don't want to homeschool. Oh my God. I mean, I don't want to do math and all that.
Trust me, you made the right decision. I'm doing that now. And I feel like I need to go back to first grade or second grade.
No, it's so hard. I mean, and so I said, I went to the school and they said, well, in California, she went to a public school. They said there's something called an independent teacher agreement. Now, I don't know if they still have that now and who knows with COVID what they have. But what it meant was I had to take, because they want the tax bill. They want to show she's in school, you know, because that has a lot to do with everything, right? So they said, you sign this document, we give you all her work for that week, and she has to do all that work the week she's gone. So, I mean, it was easy, you know, kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. But by the time she got to like seventh grade, I mean, we'd be on a long haul flight to, let's say, Singapore. And I remember this story like it was yesterday. And we were always in business class because of all my miles, you know, I would upgrade her on my miles. And of course, my clients paid for none of this. This was me taking her and she stayed in my room. The older she got, by the time she was 12, she could go with me. And then I always was in the hotel with her, but I could go to the meeting room and she could do some work. And then I'd meet her for lunch, that sort of thing. But on this flight to Singapore, I mean, we were struggling. I don't know if it was algebra, but I am not good at that stuff. Okay. And this gentleman sitting across the aisle, like, first of all, he was in a suit. Like, who wears a suit on a flight like that? I was like, wow, you're so something. And we'll come to find out he was a seriously smart engineer, which is what I needed for the math I was doing. And he looked over and he said, so it looks like you're struggling. I said, yeah. I go, we got to get this algebra done before we land. Cause I always try to get all the homework done for the whole week so we could have fun. He said, well, I could help with that. I said, oh, not a problem. Do you want me to switch seats? I mean, what do you need? I mean, it was brilliant. So right. She got the best tutoring by probably one of the most brilliant men. And, you know, I never know who he is or never knew who he was. And I, to this day, thank him for that.
Incredible. Incredible. And I'm telling you, you did make the right decision as far as not being the homeschool mom, because I'm going through it right now. But something that you mentioned that I want to just go track back on, they made you feel guilty. Who is gay and guilty that you're a working mom? Because you hear that from so many different moms, is you can't have it all, but you had it all and you were doing it all. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's why I wrote the book, because I basically said, I live a very simple life to thrive in a very real world of work and home, because I didn't want to be a stay-at-home mom ever. Okay. You know, I always thought I'd have more than one child, but then my husband said, you're a great mama one. I mean, you know, probably one of the biggest arguments we ever had was, I was like, no, we should have two. I have a sister. You had a sister. Like, and he goes, Cindy, one's easy to manage. Two's going to be harder, getting the tickets, doing all of that. The guiltiness came from, seriously, the Orange County moms, the ones that had the nanny, but still did all the tennis lessons, the ones that were constantly, you know, I'd come home, you know, well, can you do this? And, you know, like back in the day, because this is now she's 33, remember, there was, and you won't probably know this, Rob, from New York, but there was Bunko and all these things, the little, you know, Real Housewives of Orange County did, and their little suburban life. And I didn't like any of it. And so they would say, well, you know, you're never here anyway. And I'd say, well, that's fine. I mean, let's go to dinner or let's have a cocktail. So I started the book and it's a very simple, little, easy read. You can read it in literally 2 hours. And I started when Jesse was little, and I started thinking, like, what is balance? So one of the things that infuriated me was my friends that were stay-at-home moms, okay, that their husbands or partner or whoever they shared that life with would come home from work and they would hand the kid to the husband or wife or whoever came home. They'd hand the kid to that person and go, okay, you're in charge now. I'm exhausted. And I would look at him and go, what? Like, you have a nanny and you're playing tennis and you can take a nap when the kid takes a nap, and your husband, and this was in my case, that's what I saw some of these women with their husbands. And I would literally just look at them like, it's sad. And so when I sat down at a dinner table with my daughter and husband, we had great conversations. Now, if I would have had FaceTime as much back then, it would have been easier, but we didn't. I talked to her all day long. I talked to her every night. Our whole line was, I'm looking at the same moon as you are and the same stars. And I'm looking at the same, just keep looking at it and I'll be home soon. And so as she grew up, she really appreciated the fact that I did it all and I was happy. Some people do it all and they complain every day. And so their family around them is, they think it's miserable. Oh, I work so hard. I do this. I do that. I love working. I don't ever see myself retiring. I mean, what would I do? I love working.
So there was no balance, but you were able to do it all and you were loving it. How does your daughter, when she reflects back on this, what does she tell you? What does she say?
So she's really quite funny. Okay. So she's very much like me now. And she always really was. Now she looks a lot more like me. She looked like her dad. I kept saying, well, I know I gave birth to you. So that's important. But you know, the key is that she has stories of like living one of the best lives. But then there were times we did have cry moments, you know, it would be like, you're going to miss this. Now, one of us was always, for every swim meet, for every volleyball tournament, for every major thing, it wasn't a nanny raising our kid. Okay. So one of us was always there. 90% of the time it was my husband more than me, because that's kind of what we had to do. My job took me on the road. Every Sunday I got on a plane. I literally was, you know, in a destination Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night, I'd fly red eyes to get home. I'd do whatever it took. We'd have the weekend. But remember, the weekend for me was like Saturday and then maybe Sunday morning because I was on a plane again. And so she, to this day, she thinks she had the best life. She now is way more of a homebody than I would have thought. I mean, she's very domestic.
She doesn't want to travel and all that other stuff.
Not as much as like, no. And I say to her, she's like, well, no. And she's married and she loves it. And she's very, you know, she works for me. She runs our office in Houston. So she graduated with the degree in maritime administration so she could manage ports of call. And her, it was when she graduated, she was going to go to Dubai and manage, you know, grow up and learn about how to run a port in a city and all of that. And she, like a lot of kids, because she always said to me, I'm never going to be in the hotel business. I'm never going to be in the restaurant business. I don't want to work like that. I want to do something else. And we encouraged her. We encouraged her to go and do whatever you want to do. And she got a degree in something totally different. It's a business degree, but it does specialize in that. But she ended up saying, well, I'll work for you a little while. So she traveled her first year with me. And that's when she said no, because it was all about, oh, you're the next Cindy. Oh, you're the next Cindy. And she isn't like that. She's a lot quieter, more analytical, like her dad. So, you know, I'd walk up on stage in front of hundreds of people to give a speech and talk. And then we'd go come down and then we'd be mingling at the cocktail reception and people. So you'll be doing that next. And she would look at me and said, no, this is not happening. So she's in sales. She's an incredible salesperson. She's probably one of our top producers and, she's loving it. So it's all okay.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You guys are tuned in to After Dark with Robin Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the great shows. We will be back with more from guest Cindy Novotny. She will be back to discuss Biden raising taxes, the $15 minimum wage, and her book, Living with No Balance and Loving It.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
And we're back with our guest, Cindy Novotny, the author of Living with No Balance and Loving It. Now, Cindy, something that you mentioned before we went to break, you were talking about the relationship with you and your daughter and how you would take her on the road with you with all these trips, but at the same time, you made certain that she got a quality education. So yeah. I want to talk about education. And since this whole shutdown, our kids, taxpayer parents, have been paying taxes for our kids to go to school, public schools, for some of us.
Right.
However, many of these kids were being taught at home, homeschooled. Isn't the best, was not the best, will not be the best. And trying to get the kids back into school, it has been like hell and high water because teachers' unions have been fighting it, saying, no, we need this and we need that. But at the same time, I'm hearing that in San Diego, some of the teachers are going to the border to teach the kids that are coming here illegally, thanks to their parents, or no thanks to their parents. What are your thoughts on that? The border crisis and our kids can't get an education, but we could teach their kids. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have a huge issue with that. And I live in Southern California, and I have a huge issue with the fact that they're coming over the border. They're literally, they don't have to be vaccinated, and that yet they're getting vaccinated before many of ours, but they're coming over, no testing. They're being put on buses and planes and sent all over this country. And then all those teachers down there, you know, with all these kids that they're teaching, but they're not in their schools teaching their taxpayers' kids. And I have a big issue with that. We are a country that is a melting pot. I get that. Okay. My husband's family all immigrated from the Czech Republic. My dad's side of the family immigrated from Syria. My mom's side of the family immigrated from England. We get that. But, you know, I also have a person on my team who came over here from England, has worked for us. We legally got her green card. She's now a U.S. citizen. She did everything right. And it makes me crazy that people get so spun up that, you know, well, we have to take care of these people. Well, they're not coming legally. And then on top of it, we are taking resources away from our own children and from our own communities to work with people. It's not like I want to treat them bad, they're kids, but they should not be being brought over. And I think in an argument with on this, I go, oh, really? Do you know where those kids are going? How do you know where they're being shipped off to? What kind of person is getting a hold of that 14-year-old girl or boy? Most of them are girls, as you notice. And that's a big issue. And again, this doesn't matter what side of the fence anyone's on. This is just an issue. And it really does drive me crazy.
Right. It's a people's issue. And you would think that those individuals on the left would understand that.
Yeah, I don't. And my friends, you know, I mean, it's been a tough time, let me tell you, as you can imagine, with some of your friends. And we've had moments over the course of time. But I try to say to them, look, like, just put politics aside. Can you actually tell me that you think that's normal? And all that ever happens when I try to have a conversation like that is they argue with me and they just make me feel bad. So you don't want to take care of those kids. I go, what about our kids? What about the kids that are in San Diego that are not being taught by those teachers? What about that?
Well, I don't feel bad at all, because my whole thing is the kids should not be here. I want our kids first, our taxpayer dollars. And once we're done, like you said, there is a process for them to come here. There is a process. Why would we let them come, make them citizens, and get ahead of those individuals who are following the laws and following the rules? They've right. made it political. They're looking at, they being the Democrats, are looking at, hey, we let them come here and they'll vote Democrat. Now, if this were Republicans trying to come here, they would have already shut the border, build a wall as high as it can get all the way to heaven. But because they see future voters, future Democratic voters, it's, oh, so what? Let them come. And the hardship that these kids are encountering as they cross the border is unbelievable. But no one wants to talk about it.
And I think that's going to backfire, because I'm going to tell you right now, this country, I mean, if you go back to the 60s and you go back to, you know, all the different, you know, races and all the different people and all the different cultural backgrounds, whether it's Hispanic or Black or white, it doesn't matter. Those people start at some point, all of us, to see like what is going on. And I mean, I grew up with a dad that worked his tail off. I mean, we lived, when he was in college, we lived in a mobile home. That's why to this day, I would never use the word trailer trash. You know, people like, I had no problem. My dad would put cardboard in his shoes to make sure he was able to get to work, because we didn't have the money. But yet as a child, we didn't even know that. We didn't know that that was unusual, that we had breakfast for dinner sometimes. You know, to this day, I actually love breakfast for dinner sometimes. And they did it because it was cheaper. But see, this is where it's not about politics. It's about actually the human side of life and the fact that anyone thinks that's normal. And all of that has gone, you know, it's happened over and over and over again. And until people start just saying, stop the madness. And what does scare me, I am literally this child, I've donated so much time with, you know, child trafficking, trying to see how that goes. We've been training, you know, everybody has been trained on it. You know, when people were out, how to look for it, because I sit in airports and I sit there and, you know, when you close the stall in the bathroom, I don't know how it is in men's, but in mine, and, you know, on the back of that wall, it's saying, you know, if you see someone who looks like they're crying for help, call this number. And if you see somebody that doesn't look like they should be with that person, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like I see, so, what do you walk up to them and say, hi, are you being kidnapped right now? I mean, like what really, what is going on? So when you open the floodgates to let all these young girls come in and then they're just being shipped off, what common sense does that make?
Yeah, a lot of people do not see that side of it. Speaking of what children are being taught in our schools, Cindy, what are your thoughts on socialism? I just read earlier that 69% of young people believe that socialism is a good thing. How different is that from when you were a kid?
Well, first of all, that means they don't have parents that are educating them. My parents grew up during the World War II. My husband went to the Czechoslovakia before it was called Czech Republic to play in a school performance, and it was still communist rule. And we know the difference. And socialism is all about everybody gets equal. Doesn't matter if, you know, how hard you're working, this is what it's going to be. Everybody gets the same. It's the handout that doesn't work. And it started many years ago with the trophy society where everybody on the soccer team gets a trophy. No, there is only one winner. My daughter graduated in a public school here in Orange County, California, 900 kids in her graduating class. And there were 100 valedictorians. Okay, I'm sorry. There's supposed to be one. All right. And we try to marginalize everything, and we try to, and these kids, their parents aren't talking about it. They're not looking. Even the person on my team from England, you know, the UK is way more, they're socialized medicine. Look at Canada. Why do people have to wait? Her father, who was so sick, had to wait weeks to get in to see a doctor. And people think that that's okay because they're not educating their kids. And academia steps in and starts to be, I'm the smartest person in the room. And I've got a PhD, but I really haven't held a job for a long time. I've written 47 books, but it's about teaching the American dream, which is what all these people came for in the first place. Okay. And it's to work. And again, it doesn't matter who you are or what your background is. Everyone gets the same opportunity.
As you said, Cindy, you lived through it. You grew up in Michigan. You grew up in the flyover states, as they say. You know what it's like. You remember the race riots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But for some reason, they're saying, oh, no, don't focus on that. What we have right now today is the racism. No, I'm sorry. A Black person can obey the law just like a white person and a brown person and a green person. Why is it that it's always Black people? And people will say, oh, well, they're quick to shoot the Black person. Well, the Black person is quick to not want to resist being arrested. No one else is doing it. Look at the facts. Look at the pictures. Look at what we see. George Floyd, look at what happened to him. All he had to do was get in the car. Now, granted, I do believe Chauvin, that was aggressive force. He didn't have to do what he did, but neither did Mr. Floyd. Get arrested, right. Live to see another day. But that has been clouded by the media's narrative. It has been extremely clouded. And now all the other shootings that we've seen that have taken place with the media jumping up, going over and beyond to over-explain, only to find out when you hear the real story, it's not what they said at all. And they won't recant or apologize. So you have these young minds thinking they're coming after me. They want me. And it's so far from the truth.
I know. And I think, I'm going to keep going back to the parents because like, if you're not, and some of these, think about it. Some of the parents are the millennial young. They're like in their 30s. Okay. Well, don't they have parents that are in then their 60s or 70s, right? That can talk about it. And part of that is you can't erase history. It's like when you look at what happened in our country over all these, you know, couple hundred years, right? Nothing was easy. Okay. Nothing. I look at all the things that have gone on biblically over the, I mean, I don't even know how you could have lived back then. Okay. It's so unbelievable. And yet you have to know where you've been to know how to go forward. And I think you said it, Rob, you can't keep just like blinding out the past, because we'll just keep living it. And we've got to continue to just get better and talk and really have discussions that are normal. I mean, but I find that I can't have normal discussions, because if someone disagrees, they just get ticked off. And yep. They just get ticked off. There is no, like, let's really sit down and have a debate. Let me just show you some information. And they just get like totally like you're the worst person in the world.
And that's the problem right there. They don't want to have the conversation. They say they want to have the conversation. I look at some of the people on TV and they say, oh, white people should just shut up and just listen. Okay, if you're saying to shut up and listen, but how can anyone learn if they don't understand what you're talking about? I think about Sharon Osbourne when she was asking her fellow host, Cheryl Underwood, you know, explain to me, talk to me. And they just lit her up. Oh, how dare she? But if you can't have the conversation, we keep saying have the conversation. We need to have the conversation. And I've said this on more than one occasion. Conservatives have got to push back. We have lost the culture war, and we've got to start pushing back on it.
Absolutely. We see that every single day with this cancel culture out there. Cindy, what are your thoughts on the cancel culture where we see people getting fired from their jobs for what they say on social media? Just totally ridiculous.
Oh, I'm nervous of it every single day. And it makes me crazy, because I've never, one of the things that I've done in the 30 years of our business is all my social media is very, very positive, very, everything is like really all true, but positive. I stay away from politics on all my messaging. I stay away from, you know, all the things going on with the, racial economy. I stick with business, and I stick with like, let's just keep our nose to the grindstone and get on with it. But it sickens me that somebody that disagrees with you, you know, okay, you're done. And, you know, it happens every single day. I mean, you know, I went off Twitter because of major, you know, I literally got hacked. Somebody put something on there and people, and I know because I commented on one other thing about our governor, and then you should have seen how I was taken down. And so I ended that. And because I can't afford for our company, for me to be, because I'm very much a face of the company, I'm out there, I can't afford to do it. And I have people on my team, by the way, on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. And we have always said, everybody gets to say what they want. I'm not going to have a company that doesn't allow anybody to say what they want. But if you want to play in that mix, then you best feel okay taking the heat from both sides. You can't just shut down and get mad. You've got to be able to discuss things. And the cancel culture is going to end up destroying those that are doing the canceling, because, and Rob said, at some point, I wish I had the chutzpah to just lay it out there, but I don't. But there's going to come a time where the people that have been canceling everybody are going to get canceled themselves.
Exactly. And it's going to happen extremely fast, because you look at just the other day or 2 weeks ago, when there was the editor of, I think it was Teen Vogue, she was pushing this whole thing with cancel culture, and then she herself got canceled. It's not good at all. It is not a recipe that you want to build a strong foundation, because right now we're looking at, well, I can counsel this person because I don't like what they're saying. And if they say something, I'm going to counsel them. But eventually the counselor of the councils will be counseled also. And it's dangerous, because we're going back to the Red Scare. When you don't like something that someone is saying, okay, let me put their name out there and I'm going to counsel them. That's not who we are as a people. You might disagree, but we have to agree to disagree respectfully.
Exactly. And I think the word you just said was respectfully. Okay. So everything. And when I say there's as much racism against just a normal, like everyday white person.
Okay? Oh, but don't say that, because it's like, that's impossible.
But it is. And I see it.
I agree.
And the thing is, I don't live in a world, I honestly, and you know, and when people say this, you know, you can say, oh, I'm not a racist. Okay. I'm not, but I don't say that, because if you say that, they go, well, then you are, because you said that. The point is, it's how you surround yourself. It's who you surround yourself with. It's how you have respect, how you have respect for everyone, how you show care and compassion. And, you know, you said it yourself, Rob, I mean, with George Floyd. Okay. He, you know, granted, I do agree the force. I'm like, oh my gosh. When I watched it, I was like, at the very, very beginning, I said, that was like so unnecessary. But again, you said he resisted arrest. The key is, I mean, my license was taken away when I was like 22, I think, because of all my speeding tickets. I lived in Chicago. I didn't resist arrest at all. I mean, I saw that light coming behind me and I thought, yeah, this is not going to be a good day. And I mean, they pulled me over. They looked me up and said, okay, now I didn't go to jail or anything, but I lost my license for a year. I mean, it's pretty significant. All right. But I think that the point is, I pulled over and I said, hi, you know, I tried to smile. It didn't really matter. And they looked me up and they said, okay, well, this was it. That's it. And so, you know, they followed me home, like seriously, because I had to put that car away and it was over. And there you go. And so, you know, I'm one of these people that I believe that we need, you know, we need justice. I believe that we need law and order. I believe that we want to have freedom of everything. Just like I said about the vaccine, if you don't want to get it, you shouldn't have to get it. And no one should force anyone to do that sort of thing. And I think that's the same thing of, if you want to say something, if you're respectful, and that's why, if I was never respectful to someone, I would hope they take me down. But that's to anyone. Like red, green, purple, yellow, black, white, anything. It's respect. And this is where people talk out of both sides of their mouth, because you can't get respect if you don't give it.
Yeah, Cindy, I want to talk to you about the economy some here before we go. You know what it's like to hire employees. You've got a big company yourself. But Joe Biden is talking about raising taxes on the wealthy. The highest earners in California and New York could be missing out on 50% of their pay. How much could this affect not just wealthy people, but people on the lower end of the totem pole who can no longer even find a job if this goes into effect?
Well, what this will do for entrepreneurs like us, is we have taken very good care of our teams over the years. Now, last year was a bit of a you-know-what show. And so what will happen, you know, we have incredible benefits that we pay for our employees, which not everybody that's a small privately owned business does. You know, the way in which we do their 401k and SEP IRAs, all of that, we match ours. So we have always been, we are always on the generous side. So what that's going to do is that's going to shut it all down, because are you kidding? We have worked our tail off, and we're at a point in our life because we have been smart and we have saved and we have invested and done the right things, that if that happens, all right, there's no reason to stay in business. Because, and then what happens to the people that are going to all lose their jobs just in our little world? And that's going to happen to a lot of people, because, you know, during every recession, during every time the economy falls apart, who is it, by the way, that pulls us out? Small business owners. It's not the big corporations. They don't do that. And it's always the small guy. It's the guy that, you know, started their little company, built it up. And they will destroy that entrepreneurial way. And that will affect a lot of people in their jobs. And it that's where socialism then creeps right in. So then we'll have the government, you know, funding things. There'll be more of that. And that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much to our guest, Cindy Novotny, for joining us tonight. Please check out her book, Living with No Balance and Loving It. You can find that on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or even Walmart. Wow, Rob, I was really impressed with our guest, Cindy Novotny. What an incredible businesswoman who clearly has her head on her shoulders and her mind thinking straight. She is really onto something. And what did you think of our guest, Rob?
No, I thought Cindy was really good. She was very refreshing and giving us an insight as to what her business went through during the COVID shutdown. Because we've spoken to other people and we're going to bring additional guests on the show that will talk about it. But here we have a firsthand experience as to what she went through. She didn't give up. She didn't stop. She played by the rules, but she realized that she had to keep going. She had payroll to meet. She had people that she had to pay. And that's one of the things that I like about these business owners. When they're not thinking about themselves, that they're willing to forego their paycheck, their money, their profit in order to pay their people. You don't see that a lot of times in corporations. In corporations, it's, I want my bonus, then you can pay them, but give me my bonus first. When she said that, you know, she and her husband, they went without in order to pay their employee.
Right. We're
going to have another person, business owner, who's going to come on and say the exact same thing.
Yeah, we always hear from the left how evil rich people are and how they don't help their employees. But here we had a story of this woman who's went out of her way to help out her employees. And we hear this a lot from business owners. These people are just looking to help out, keep things going. They want to run a steady business and have good employees. This attack on the rich from the left has got to stop.
It has to stop because these are the people that are paying, you know, from their taxes, they're paying to help keep things going. And if you keep taxing them, they're going to leave. They're going to run away. I look at New York City. Our governor wants to further tax the rich. Oh, they can afford it. But we know that it's going to be the middle class that's going to bear the brunt of this. And once you get done taking other people's money and spending it, whose money are you going to use then? You look at Venezuela. You look at what happened in Cuba. Time after time after time, we see that this does not work. If anything, you want to give them tax incentives so that they will create more jobs, bring in more businesses. But the left, they seem to hate that. Oh, no, no, no. We don't want, they can pay. We need to tax them up to wazoo. And why? Why would you want to run away your tax base? Again, New York City. As soon as COVID hit, these people started packing their bags and leaving town. And now that they hear that the governor wants to continue to tax them, you have Wall Street that's looking at getting out of here. You have Goldman Sachs, the New York Stock Exchange. They're looking to relocate, maybe to Texas, maybe to Florida. And then who's going to be your tax base? The homeless people? The people that are coming across the border illegally? No, they're not thinking about this. We don't have level-headed people, Andrew, really sitting down and thinking about this. And you would think that we would, considering these people went to all the Ivy League schools and got all these fancy degrees. But when it's time to apply it, they have no idea. It's just, I see you, you're rich, we're going to take more of your money. And when you take more and more, just keep taking and taking and taking. And as Cindy said, I mean, this new deal that Biden is going to do, she said it's going to kill jobs, these new taxes. It's going to kill jobs. People will not want to create more jobs. They'll kill the jobs here, and then the United States will cozy up to China and to all these other countries and send the jobs there. What sense does it make?
Yeah, and it's only going to get worse when Biden starts putting in all these radical plans he has. When you're talking about the infrastructure plan, which is over $1 trillion, he wants to do a $15 minimum wage and then tax rich people 50% of their income. Things are only going to get a lot worse. Biden's getting a lot of credit right now because jobs are picking up, because a lot of these blue states are finally opening things up, which they should have done a long time ago. And Joe Biden's getting the credit for a lot of these people returning to work. I don't believe that Joe Biden has created a single job yet.
Absolutely not. I give him no credit. He has not created a job. The only thing he has done is close jobs and take away jobs. I look at my home state of Arkansas. And what he's done there, I mean, with the fossil fuel, he has just like decimated an entire industry. And he doesn't care. His thing is, oh, they can learn coding. Are you serious? Is coding going to pay them what they were making before you took their jobs, the coal jobs? I mean, this is it aggravates me when I hear this and I see it and people, oh, Joe Biden, oh, he's this, he's that. And then the media, the way they just fawn all over this guy. is anybody but Trump. And the way they're trying to just destroy Trump, everything, they want to eradicate him from history. They want to make it as if, though, if you even bring up his name, it's dirty because he was a mean, bad person. And that is the reason why I wanted him to win. That is the reason why I want him to run in 2024. Because when he runs, and I hope he gets people who will support him, that we could go in and shut down these people for once and for all, hardcore, lock them down, get rid of them, because they are nothing but evil socialists, communists. They care nothing for this country. And yes, I speak passionate about it, because see, I see what they're doing to the country. They are ripping this country apart, Andrew. They are ripping us apart. They have neighbors against neighbors, brothers against brothers, sisters against sisters, husbands against wives, families aren't speaking. And why? Because of the silliness that these people are perpetrating on us, that they're forcing down our throats. It is insane. When you sit back and you look at Trump's term compared to Joe Biden, any level-minded person would say, this guy is destroying the country. All these radical plans and radical ideas, like the school and the critical race theory. What does critical race have to do with anything? How would you tell a child that you're bad because of your skin color and tell another child that you're good? This is not apartheid Africa. This is not Rwanda. But that's what we're doing. That's what Joe is pushing when he gets up and says, oh, Jim Crow laws and Jim Crow and blacks this and blacks that. Time out. This has to stop. And I would say to Black people, wake up. Because if you think you have the upper hand now, and if you think this is a way to go, you are sadly mistaken. Because what this man is doing is creating class warfare. And in the end, you will lose. People have got to wake up before it's too late. Crazy ideas that they're putting on the American people, it's absurd. Joe has done nothing but been divisive. It is a continuation of Obama's years in the White House. And as I said before, the Obamas, the most polarizing people to be in the White House and to leave the White House. He has done nothing since he has left the White House but to continue to traffic in racism. And it is extremely unfortunate. We are the laughingstock of the world. No, they're not proud of us. And if you hear anyone who's coming here from another country and they're telling you, oh, no, you know, you guys, you're on the right track. No, because they want this country to fail because their own countries failed miserably. You look at Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib. They're gloating behind closed doors that this country is very fragile and it could collapse and go into complete chaos. So when I see people like that, I'm like, I know their intentions are not intentions for America. They hate America. They hate just us as a whole, as a country, our constitution. They hate us. And it is very unfortunate, Andrew. Extremely unfortunate. So I'm glad Cindy came on, and I'm glad she shared with us what she went through personally as a businesswoman. Again, a woman, but she had the fortitude to keep going so that she could keep paying her people. And that's who we are as Americans. We don't give up. We keep fighting on and on and on.
Yeah, it was a very informative show tonight. And thank you for joining us tonight on After Dark with Robin Andrew. Check us out and all of the other shows over at AmericaOutLoud.com, who just celebrated its 5th anniversary. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher. See you guys next time. And remember to stand for something or you will fall for nothing.